Welcome to the Art and Science of Joy podcast. This podcast is all about inspiring people to live more joyfully. So if you're seeking a bit more joy in your own life or seeking to bring some more joy to the lives of others, then this podcast could well be for you. And in the second series of the podcast, we're focusing on joy's superpowers, special powers each and every one of us can cultivate in order to navigate these turbulent times in which we live. I'm Andrew Cannon, and I have the honor to be your host. In each episode, I'll be inviting our guests to share their words of wisdom on a specific joy superpower. And in this episode, I'm excited to be talking with Glenn Birkenkamp on the joy superpower of walking. Glenn is a writer, teacher, mystic, a grounded free thinker, a lover of life, a son, a brother, an ex-bodybuilder, a transformational speaker, and a forever student of self and soul. Glenn is author of Mastery Living the Highest You, and his latest book is simply called Walking with Glenn Birkenkamp. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew. It's great to hear your voice and connect.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you here. And let's dive right into the book. And I know in the preface to the book, you know, you talk about, you know, going on walks, that walking, reducing stress, it's something that you consider to be one of the greatest inheritances from your youth. Can you tell us about the walks with your family, you know, when you were growing up and how that shaped you?
Oh, yeah, it'll bring me great joy to share with you about that, especially since I'm currently in the same house that I grew up in as I'm here on holiday. So I'm looking out at where we used to walk. So it's nice. You've arranged the perfect timing, or spirit has, or the universe. Yeah,
exactly.
So when you asked about the family walks, it was kind of a ritual that we would go for an after dinner walk. So we lived in what you'd call a suburban area, and we'd walk around the block usually. This was a daily occurrence. Mm. And it did a few things. One, of course, it unites you as a family unit. It's something you do together, right? And it allowed me at a very young age, my father was a photographer, so he had an eye to see the world and he really noticed the world. So when walking with my father, he would point out things and we would point out things and see things ourselves. And I noticed it was much different than when you drove in a car down the street as a young boy. Things just sort of flew by.
Speed.
But when you walk through, you would notice, oh, so-and-so's fence perhaps was new, or so-and-so's daffodils are blooming, or so-and-so's tree may have lost a limb. And so you start to see this world around you, and you do it in a way where you take it in at your own speed and in your own way, and you can share. So these walks, they bonded us as a family. They opened my eyes to the world around me, and they let me know that this simple thing of walking can bring me so much more than just getting me from point A to point B. It was what existed in between the two points, from the time we left the house to the time we returned.
Yep.
We were enriched in some way. And this was, of course, before I learned anything about happiness hormones and neurotransmitters and things like that that get triggered from walking. This was simply a young boy walking, you know.
Well, but it's so important, those formative years, you know, those experiences and to have that. I must admit, I was a bit of an impatient child, so I tended to walk between one lamppost to the next and then run between the next two.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. That's for sure. And the lamppost probably appreciated your attention.
They certainly did. They were well respected. Definitely. Yes. Definitely. So, you know, and then walking became, rather a constant, a companion with you through your life, through all the changes, childhood, career, both your inner and obviously outer transformations that you've had. And so just in a few words, how would you sum up your relationship with walking?
Gratitude. One, and perhaps, you know, the most obvious is that I've been very fortunate that I'm able to walk. All my life, I've had the ability to walk, whereas others don't have that ability. So for me, there's always an immediate gratitude attached to the fact that I can physically walk. And then another word that often comes up for me when I think of the walking and the way you presented this to me is home. Walking brings me home within myself. Mm. And when you're home within yourself, everything is better. Right? So it's like watering the inner garden when I go for a walk, you know. So for me, it yields a lot of fruit.
Wow. So it really has that inner feeling attached to it for you, not just sort of the exercise, not just the getting from A to B.
Yes. So for me, one of the things I find that walking can do, kind of like when a computer is acting up and they tell us to reboot the computer, they'll say, unplug it, wait 30 minutes or 30 seconds in that case, and replug it in. And then sort of magically things get fixed. And I find if you take a walk with another human being, it's often like you're helping them to reboot. You're rebooting their system. They kind of get into this more, maybe not fully calm, but a more settled state. Certainly a more receptive state in a more balanced state. So for me, walking, yes, it does have the burning the calories is great. The cardiovascular benefits are great. And of course, the stress reduction is great. But what I find it really, really has the superpower to do is bring us into this presence within us that is often not there when we're just rushing through our life. And even rushing through our internet life, you know, looking from window to window to tab to tab.
And I can see that. And I can see that connection element to it as well. When you're walking with somebody else, you can have those types of conversations.
You can't
have in the car, or you can't have to the same effect.
You know? And one of the interesting things that I'm glad you brought that up, Andrew, because one of the interesting things about walking with another when we're conversing is when I sit across from you at a table, it would be very odd during our conversation if I started looking off to the left for a minute or two before I responded. You would think, okay, well, maybe he has something else on his mind besides me, right?
Yeah.
But when you walk, there's no, it's not like a ping pong match where it just has to keep going back and forth. It naturally allows for space, space within us, space within the dialogue. And it's not only accepted, it's just comes with the territory of taking a walk. So I think that is wonderful for people. It's also great for people that might have trouble making eye contact in regular conversation. So, you know, I find it to be a dynamic way of communication to unfold in an organic sense. It overrides a lot of our fears too.
Like that idea of overriding the fears. I like the idea of not being forced into this sort of adversary almost across the table. Let's have a conversation type thing, right? Whereas it's just natural. It's just a chat, a walk, and there's
let's walk and see what occurs.
Silence
is acceptable, and also being open to whatever we see when we walk, right? And so, you know, it's really quite powerful. And you know, it's interesting. My book has 35 guided walks in it, and there was one more walk.
Okay.
And I didn't want to put it in because I wanted the number 35 in the title. I felt it was supposed to have 30. But the other one talk was a walking meeting. So whether it be a business group or whatever, because there's research has shown so much the power of this, you know, the ability to just go for a walk with your team. And interestingly enough, I held that walk out and my book came out just in the height of COVID. So it was a time when no one was gathering, where people weren't. And so I said, oh, well, it's interesting that that's the one walk that was out. But I bring it up now because Stanford, I believe it's Stanford University, did a study that showed walking increases creative decision-making and inspiration by 60%.
Wow.
So when you had someone like Steve Jobs, you know, who created Apple, he would do walking meetings all the time. I believe Richard Branson does them as well, and they find great value in them. And I think it's for one of the very reasons, not only the outgrowth of creativity that comes from, but I think it's also the relaxation. And it also takes people out of the hierarchy of, okay, I'm your CEO, you're here, we're sitting in the boardroom, I'm at the end of the table, you're to the left. All of a sudden, we're just walking as this collective unit, and it's quite powerful.
It is powerful, and I think also the powerfulness of you know you are walking in the same direction. You are journeying together.
Yes,
actually, a bonding element to that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think collectively, you're open to inspiration.
Mm.
that you that they find often, Jobs would talk about that when you're in a boardroom, you're locked into that world. Right. You're limited in a sense by those walls. When you're out walking, you're sort of taken out of that and you're into a vastness that you can connect into.
So. Yeah, and that's where real life is taking place.
Yes.
So, I mean, your journey is fantastic. We're not going to have time to go into all of it, but I do really want to sort of understand a little bit from how can you get from being a bodybuilder or a competitive judge for the Mr. USA, for example, transforming yourself into a writer, a speaker, and this study of self and soul. Yeah. What were the parts on your journey that sort of transformed you in this way?
Thank you for the question, because to take us from where I am now and then work backwards, I've come to a point in my life where I live a life of service. And that life of service is guided by, I would call it inspiration, inner promptings. Maybe it's a heart-centeredness, a receptivity to God or the universe, whatever one chooses. And that's how I live my life. And because of this tapestry, this path that I've had through the whole life, I can teach from that whole cloth. So early on, as you stated, I was a bodybuilder. So what does bodybuilding generally do? It introduces us to our physical body in a very, very focused manner. So at a young age, I learned about the mechanics of the body, how the body gets stronger, certain elements of movement, muscle function, kinesiology. So you learn those things, and then you go a little one step further. You get into the gym and you get into performance and training, and you start to realize something, an element that's very important, and that's the mind-muscle connection, right? Okay. So you start to see that when you're doing an exercise, if your mind is connected to the exercise, it's more effective. So then you say, well, how does that carry over when I'm outside the gym? Wouldn't that be the same? So in my own path, I started to understand that focus and visualization, and coupled with doable actions, let's say lifting a weight, yielded great results. And so for me, my path went from a very, what you'd call grounded in physical life. Early in my early youth, I had no curiosity about spirit. I had no care for it. It just wasn't on my radar. Then at one point I'd moved to California. I believe I was 23 years old. And it was around that time that I felt I'd sort of done everything that I could do in the sport of bodybuilding with my, what I would perceive as limited genetics. I was training professional bodybuilders, top amateur bodybuilders. I was judging very big bodybuilding contests, like you mentioned. But I just felt there was more to life. And then it came to a point when I said, I now want to work on my insides as much as I'd worked on my outsides. And I had no idea what that would entail. But just when I spoke those words out to God or the universe, it was like, okay, here we go. And so from that point on, I started to look at things like my thoughts. Why did I think the things I do? Yeah. Or where do they originate? My belief systems. Why do I believe the things I do? Where do those beliefs originate? And are those beliefs healthy and those thoughts healthy for me? And perhaps larger, are they healthy for the world, right? What am I contributing to the world? So my path then became one of meditation, energetic practices like Qigong, Reiki. So I started to go see beyond the physical body and realize there was much more there. There was a spiritual essence, or at least what one could call an energetic essence to the body. This became my new playground. This became my new interest. This became my new passion. So for many years, I was away from the physical aspect of the body. Of course, I'm in the body and I'm using it, but it wasn't the main focus of my life. In later years, I would say over the last 15 years or so, I've integrated it much more again. And that came largely through the practice of, I don't know if you know of Moshe Feldenkrais, but Moshe Feldenkrais was a teacher. He came up with a theory called awareness through movement. Yes. And so he worked a lot with the brain neuroplasticity, the nervous system as it relates to muscle, as it relates to tensions in the body. So one of my first parts of my transformation was through this type of very mindful work, start to realize where I had unnoticed by me muscular tensions throughout my body. So even though I was no longer a bodybuilder, I was doing things. For instance, I was brushing my teeth, but I'm using way too much muscle to brush my teeth. But that came out of these old patterns. So it was a matter of unwinding all these old tensions in my body, tensions and also muscular contractions that didn't need to be there anymore. So you could say my path went from rock to water. And now I try to honor the rock in a sense as much as I do the water and integrate it all. And so walking, mindful walking, allows me to be in touch with the muscles. It allows me to be in touch with the mind, the spirit, the nervous system, and the world around me in a way that becomes, in a sense, seamless, where it's all one thing happening. So I don't so much experience life as much in parts anymore as I do. And that's why I say I honor the rock as much as the water. Equal importance. But in my youth, I was focused on the hardness of the body, strength from an external source, and success from an external source. In my later years, I became interested in my body from the internal source and peace and joy stemming from the inside.
And now you bridge the two, bring them
together. Now I've bridged the two. And that I think is very important, because in the quote unquote spiritual teaching circles, you often have a neglect of the physical body, where the thought is to transcend the body. And as much as I understand it, and I think there's value in that type of path, and especially if one's drawn to it, I think ultimately, in the time we're in human evolution, I think it's about the integration of physicality and spirituality. And you know, there's a saying that, you know, we're spiritual beings having a physical existence. Yeah. And this is very true. And I think it's something interesting for people to ponder, because most people don't. But we're also the spiritual aspect of us, I mean, the physical aspect of us is still spiritual too. You know, so we're energy, we're molecules, atoms, we're animated by spirit, but what is being animated? This physical body. So
yeah, definitely. And I think for many people, you know, the concept of just transcending the body is difficult to implement in their daily lives.
Oh yeah. Now, this is if you're an aesthetic, if you're living a life in a cave or in isolation, or if you have areas to do it. And again, everyone has their own unique path. So I really can't comment on someone's journey. But I will say, for the most of us, when I look at it right now, when you talk about joy, which is your focus, and the science of joy, I think that comes from an integrated, balanced life. And again, we all have our individual challenges. Like I said earlier, I'm fortunate I can walk. There are people that can't walk or they're in great pain. So for me, that alone puts me in a tremendous place of appreciation and gratefulness. And because walking is one of the things that gives me joy.
It is amazing. You know, our guest that we published just before Christmas, the episode with Terry Tucker talking about coping with pain, and somebody has undergone, you know, some quite terrible events in his life. But one of the quotes I loved from him was that one thing's for sure, he said, we're all going to die.
Yes.
But I'm not sure we've all really lived.
Yes, exactly. You know, exactly. And I don't know his story, and I'm looking forward to listening. But I will say this, and this is not to be said in any way undercut what one is experiencing, or in any way, you know, belittle pain. With that said, so many people I know that have had sudden onset of big challenges in their life, when they make them through, or perhaps even in the midst of them, they start to see the lessons, and they start to see, wow, this is either a wake-up call or an expansion call or a time for some sort of deep forgiveness towards myself.
Yeah, I should definitely connect you with Terry. I think the two of you will have a great conversation together.
Yeah.
That. So let's talk about walking. And I have to ask, why 35? It's been on my mind now for a few minutes, and I haven't had the chance. So why?
Do you want the answer I would give when I'm speaking in front of a college, or the answer I'd give when I'd
give the authentic Glenn answer?
Some metaphysical friends. Well, here's the story of this book, Andrew. I was sitting, well, first let me back up and say that for years I've been a walker, as you mentioned, even through my childhood. Yeah. Through the bodybuilding times. Then I was a fitness trainer. And some of the walking I would do with people there would be very tailored to what they could do physically and also mentally. A lot of people weren't either intimidated by a gym, or I just felt it wouldn't serve their life to be in a gym, at least on certain days. So having said that, I've been working with people with walking for years and years, and done all sorts of interesting walks with them. This book, however, I was sitting at a traffic light in a town called Mill Valley, California, and I looked over at my passenger seat, and for about 3 seconds, I saw the flash of a cover of a book. It said, Walking with Glenn Bergenkamp, 35 Wellness Walks to Expand Awareness, Increase Vitality, and Reduce Stress. I said, oh, that's interesting. Boom, cover's gone. Go home that night, say, Spirit, if you want me to write this book, I'm here for it, which has long been my writing process. Next thing I know, I wrote what became, I guess it's the, it became the How to Walk section first paragraph. I wrote that automatically, and I said, okay, this book seems to want to get written. So to answer your question, the 35 were in the title. And so then I started to see, well, which are the 35? And I said, well, certainly I love taking people on gratitude walks. I love this, I love that. There's a walk that I like to do with people called the Destination Manifestation Walk. And it's basically, we're all familiar, or not all of us, but many of your listeners and people are familiar with the idea of creative visualization, or even boards. What do they call it when you make a vision board, when you make a board of your life and you want to draw these things to you? And these are powerful practices. I think even science, in a sense, backs these up.
Right, yes.
But what I found with walking is what I would do is I would say, you and Andrew and I are walking, and I see a tree 50 yards ahead. And I say, Andrew, when you reach that tree, you're going to, so I'll say, what would you like to accomplish in life? And you might say, I'd like to get a new job. We'll just use it as an example. I'll say, when you reach that tree, you're going to have the new job. So I want you to reach the tree, touch the tree. And once you do that, I want you to start to feel, what does it feel like to have that job? What does Andrew feel like? What does he look like? How does he carry himself? Then I want you to turn around and walk back to me as if you already now have that job. I want you to feel the air moving through your body as if you have that job. I want to hear your feet fall on the ground as if you have that job. The way your arms move, cut through the space as if you have that job. So we're taking this idea of visualization, but wiring it in through the whole body about how do you move? How do you breathe? How do you feel? Where's your excitement levels? And so some people say, I'd like to become more peaceful. I say, okay, you're going to walk to that that tree directly with focus. And that's when you get there, you're going to tap into peace any way you can, and then walk back with peace imbued in you. So I've done it with so many different people. So I said, well, that's going to be a walk in the book. You
know? Wow. That's amazing. Like, that really gave us a good sense of one of these walks and how it can actually take place and manifest itself, you know, because it does sound, you know, when you say, okay, well, we're going to do a mindful walk, or we're going to do a gratitude walk, you know, it's a bit abstract. So thank you very much for sort of giving me a visualization of just one of the ways in which you can do one of these walks. You have walks for all levels, right? Walks with kids, children, for example.
Yes. And, you know, one of the walks we do a lot with kids is the slow motion walk. And, you know, I recommend it highly to adults, because unless you have a special playful spirit in you to still, or you have children of your own, most adults don't walk in slow motion. Well, okay, maybe if they're injured, but they don't intentionally do it. Yeah. And there's so much to be revealed, and even walking across the room in slow motion. Wow. One of the things I'll notice, I'll say to someone, just walk, let's say 20 feet in slow motion. And what they think is slow is still pretty fast usually. So then I'll say, okay, pretend we're being filmed for a slow motion replay in a movie. How would you look? And then, of course, they'll put in their own sound effects in the body. But then you start to see what foot lifts first from the ground. When does your elbow come forward, right? When does your jaw clench? You start to see how you move. And one of the blessings and the greatest contributions that Moshe Feldenkrais, the awareness through movement teacher, brought to us was this idea that we learn best by slowing down. We learn best by slowing down. And so the slow motion walk is great for kids, because with kids, you can make it something that it's cool to do. So it's fun and cool, but it's also showing them that they have another gear, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I like to tell people in life is that most of us are walking our way through life, right? And even though life goes a certain speed, we can choose our speed. So of course there's times when we're late for a meeting and we have to accelerate, but even then we can feel our feet on the ground. We can be in our breath, we can be present. And one of the walks I have is a slow fast walk where you alternate between the two and you see if you can be as present when you're going fast as you are when you're going slow, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are mindful walks, but many of them are, layered in intention and in instruction. So it's they go beyond your average mindful walks. Yeah,
definitely. And that's what I was going to ask next, really, about what is the, how important is the purpose or intent in walking?
Well, I think in walking in general, I think first of all, one should embrace and celebrate the emptiness of walking. In other words, not layering anything into it, just giving yourself the ability to go for a walk without anything wanted in return, not even stress reduction, not even joy, just the ability to go out blank and empty and then let the world fill it in. So having said that, that would be zero intent. That would be stripping away intent. And I think some of the greatest books were probably born out of that, and musical pieces and all sorts of inspiration have come from those type of ambling walks with nothing assigned to them. So that is something that has immense value. The walks that I'm talking about here, you could say they're designer walks and they are labeled in intent. So if it is perhaps, let's say, a affirmation walk, and because we now know through science that affirmations really do help change the wiring of the brain and our outlook and our joy levels and all these other things.
Oh, very much, yes.
So I, for years ago, was very into affirmations. They helped me tremendously. And when you start layering them into walks, right? So let's say my affirmation is, I love and accept myself. Let's say that's the thing. And you walk for 15 minutes and you say that in different manners. I even say you can create a song out of it. You can tie it to your steps. Talk to them about tying it to their breathing, right? Mm-hmm. I love and approve myself. And then what happens is on top of that, at about the 15-minute mark of steady walking, you have happiness hormones, neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, all being released. So on top of the affirmation, which is a mental construct, right? Yep. You're now having these feel-good hormones flood your body. So all of a sudden, you're getting this really beautiful thing. So when I talk about walking and doing affirmations and talking about the intent, all of a sudden, this is an example of a heavily intentioned walk, but with great benefit. So, and also, you know, I tell people in all these walks, there's no such thing as perfection. There's only presence, right? Mm-hmm. No such thing as perfection, just presence. So be present to it, you know, and see what comes up. And sometimes people will change the affirmation mid-path because something else will come in and that they wouldn't have thought about while they're at home or while they're putting on their walking shoes in the car or whatever. So the intentional walking, I guide them with the steps of the how to do and how to do. Each walk has a overview which discusses what the walk is and perhaps, you know, why one should apply it to their life.
Yeah.
And then you have the benefits. It'll talk why, okay, let's say stress reduction, mental clarity, focus. And then it'll say a when to do section. So when would you do it? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm feeling sad, when I'm bored, when I feel like I need to get some mental clarity. And then there's the how to do. And then the how to do section will break it down. And then it followed by the takeaways and reflections. And that's with me giving prompts saying, well, what did it feel like to do an affirmation walk? What did you learn about yourself? What might have surprised you? So that's how each of the walk is structured. You know?
Yeah, that's brilliant. I must say, you know, I even like the no intention walk.
That
intention to say, no, there's actually no intention today. And that.
Yeah. My whole, ultimately, Andrew, is I'd like to return people to home. And the place of home within themselves is, in a sense, emptiness. It's a blankness. It's not layered with words. It's not layered with, it's a place of resting calm. And in that space is when we hear that quiet, still voice within. So the no intention, intentional walk is quite beautiful, because you're just saying, let me just be blank. Let me just be with what is.
And again, this inner and outer coming together in that integration through that.
Yes, exactly. Beautiful.
A lot of the words you mentioned, you know, when you were talking about some of the walks here, were emotions. So, you know, you're describing this strong connection between walking and emotions. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
One of the things, first of all, emotions are to be honored and not to be shamed. And when I say that, I'm talking about perhaps anger, perhaps sadness. People that will often hear, oh, you know, you don't need to cry. Well, maybe you really do. And, oh, you shouldn't be angry. Well, maybe in that moment, anger was fully justified. But what one wants to do, and what perhaps these walks help them do, is to understand why they're sad at a deeper level, and may understand why they're angry at a much deeper level. And from that space, they can make decisions, informed decisions, and say, does this level of anger or sadness really serve me or not? And am I ready to release it? Some of the walks will help with that. There are two walks in the book regarding forgiveness. And forgiveness is also often tied to sadness and anger. And you know, happiness, joy, all these things, when we walk, and we can walk in a way that we start to realize that, A, the ground beneath us supports us. That alone is a miracle, right?
Yeah.
We have ground beneath us that never leaves us. Throughout our life, we always have the support of the ground beneath us. So even if we don't feel supported one day, we can go out and walk and know that we're supported by the earth below us, right? And so the emotional component of it for me with walking is, A, it does almost every time smooth people out. So if someone is in a highly charged state, by the end of this walking, they will at least feel better.
Yeah.
So that alone is an emotional aspect. But when I mentioned the destination manifestation walk, well, let's say that that person embarked on that walk because they wanted to complete a project. And when they reached that tree and they held the tree, that was the completion. And they were going to allow themselves to feel it. And I'm done. And this feels incredible. Now I'm going to walk back 100 yards with that feeling. Well, that's an emotional charge that goes through the whole body. It's also it's also tied to this completion of something, right? This idea that I've done something. So when you go and work on that very thing, you may in that moment be able to transfer that energy of what you've experienced into the project and actually help it manifest. So, you know, again, emotion, energy, motion, emotion, right? And so walking is energy motion as well. So it all marries up quite well. Yeah. But at the end of the day, what I most want to introduce people to is a sense of stillness. And even though walking isn't stillness, it helps us reduce the noise around us, the mental static and chatter around us in the world, and get to that clear place within us. And there's the stillness.
Yeah. And I think, you know, apart from when we're sleeping, and even then we're not necessarily still all the time, but you know, I think we are built to move. And
yes,
we spend too much time sitting and other
stuff. Yes. And Moshe Feldenkrais used to always say, life is movement. Mm. When we cease to move, we cease to live, right?
In many ways.
Yes, and we see that as we age, right? You know, there's a man named Stephen Jepson who, oh boy, if you haven't heard of him, you should interview him. He's a gem. I think he's in his 80s now, and he became well known for a video he put out called Never Leave the Playground. And he does these games each day, everything from balancing on a tightrope in his backyard to juggling. And he is he's a national icon.
The nothing power of play is amazing. It's amazing.
Yes. And so, you know, and that's movement, right? So he talks about movement and, you know, little things he can do. Can he pick up marbles with his toes, right? So because the reason I came onto this thread right now and bringing him up is because generally as we age, we use less and less of our body, right? You know, so we've become, and in this day and age, of course, it's going to be the screens, the neck is going to be jetted forward. You're going to see more and more people with those sort of problems because that's just how we're You know, yeah. We're not out digging, and we're not, you know, it's life is becoming more and more in chairs and screens.
Very much so. Very much so. So when we talk about joy, we talk about four key ingredients to joy. We talk about obviously well-being as being part of that. We talk about belonging. We talk about having a positive impact, whether that's on the environment or on others. And we talk about having fun. So those are the four basic ingredients. And we could go with well-being, you know, we could take it down to spiritual, physical, emotional, mental. Yeah. But if we just stick at those four, and I'm going to put you on the spot. And I'm going to say, can you please design for us a joyful walk that incorporates these four elements? What would that type of walk look like?
Well, first of all, I think if they took those four words that you said and reflected on them prior to walking, right? And then this idea of infusing the walk with this sense. So when you talk about connection or community, I think that was one of your things.
Belonging, yeah.
Belonging. Well, when you walk, like I said earlier, when you drive down a street in a car, you catch certain things. When you walk through a field or a park or a city, you see it and you see your place within it. And if you look really close, and when I say really close, I don't mean just with your eyes, but with your whole presence, you start to see this interwoven nature of everything. You start to see the interconnected nature of life. And within that, well, that's certainly fun. And there's certainly joy in that. And there's certainly belonging in that and wellness in that. So I think the very nature of taking those four words and just walking with them is that alone, taking those words for a walk in a sense is very healthy. But I think, you know, the gratitude walk that I have two gratitude walks in a book. One is to be done solo and one is to be done with a group. And let's say the solo one is the entire time from when you leave your home or your car or wherever you are, you express gratitude. So, and there and back. So in doing so, not only would you come up certainly with things in each of the categories you mentioned, but it would do something within your body to give you all those things. And that is really like when you walk and you say, I'm grateful for being connected to this ground. I'm grateful for the clouds above me. I'm grateful to be able to walk. I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful to have gas in my car. You know, these things more and more, not only are they bringing this joy, this gratitude, they're strengthening the gratitude muscle, which is I feel a muscle because you really see it grow in people when they work with it. And then joy, as we know, it's unlike happiness, which is something we obtain outside of ourselves. Joy is an inner thing. So you could be joy-filled even in a very hard, challenging moment in life. Generally, you're not happy in those moments, but you can still have an essence of joy in those moments. So once again, I think walking, mindful walking, can take us into this place that allows for one, expansiveness into all that is, and two, expansiveness into your inner world. And that inner world that goes beyond the static, the conditioning, the shoulds, I should be better at that, I should be doing this, is so potent. It is so powerful. It is the home of who you are. You know, the true core nature of who you are is that internal being. So I don't know if I thank you for putting me on the spot. I don't know if I hit the spot.
You did. No, but, it was good. You could have gone lots of different ways with that one. And I'm really grateful for the way you did go. I think
thank you.
Connecting it that way brings it. And again, it's going to be different for each person.
Exactly.
Other person, it could be, you know, it's going to be physically with other people to make sure we have that. Whereas it's going to be internal.
Exactly.
And both are equally valid. There's no to joy.
Exactly.
Definitely. And I suppose, you know, we've seen, you know, from the science, there's huge benefits from walking. You know, I know you talk a lot about stress and de-stressing, and there's a lot of science showing the power of walking on decreasing stress. There's one that we found by some scientists from Japan, a scientist called Mr. Morita, and found that walking in nature definitely leads to a decrease in stress responses. And obviously everybody knows about the physical benefits of walking, emotional benefits. I'm wondering, are there anything that surprised you through all your walks? Is there anything you're going, wow, I didn't expect that?
I think the thing that surprises me most about my walks is that I can learn something new every day. Mm. And I'm someone that's very aware of how their feet hit the ground, how their toes roll forward and push off the ground, how my arms move through space, where my eyes go. But every day I learn something new about myself, and I learn something new about the world around me. So I'd say that that's the surprising nature of it, is that we're all a work and walk in progress. And myself included, having written a book on mindful walking. So I think the biggest surprises, and also one other element of it, and hopefully I can articulate this, is that I've gotten to a point in my life when I can expect surprises and be honor surprises. So I've learned to live more in the mystery of life and celebrate the mystery of the life and celebrate the unknown. And out of the unknown comes these, like you're talking about, the surprises, you know, or in many cases, the gifts.
Yeah. So you have this openness, you connect to it.
Yes.
It enables you to be open and to go, wow, you didn't notice that before.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. It's fascinating, right? And also, of course, I really love people. Mm. So when you walk, sometimes you encounter others, sometimes you don't. Sometimes I walk with large groups, sometimes I don't. You know, recently more and more people have been asking me about leading groups again, you know, because of the COVID. And of course you can, it's outside and these sort of matters. And it's an interesting thing for me because I love it, but I also really love being by myself and walking. So there's a balance for me to be had between now leading more walks and just walking
going
myself.
Out for your own sneaky walks.
Yes.
Nobody's watching.
Yeah.
2 o'clock in the morning. Do your night. Yes. Do your moonwalk. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes.
You can do that one. So if you had to name one of your walks, just one of the 35 that's your favorite, would you be able to do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be the Inner Smile Walk. And because I know how it lights people up inside, and I really love the idea of lighting people up inside. Wow. And the Inner Smile Walk, briefly, is a walk where after you do the initial, what I would tell people before every walk is to do something, a GBS. So GBS stands for, instead of a GPS, where it's a global positioning system, it's GBS. Yes. And basically it's something I teach people to do before every walk. And it's basically to connect to G, the ground underneath you, B, the breath within you, and S, the space around you. So I always tell people, before you leave the house and grab your cell phone, your wallet, and all that, take this other thing with you. And that's the ground beneath you, the breath within you, and the space around you. So once people have settled into that, and they see in the book how to connect in that, takes under 2 minutes. Then they would, prior to walking, they would think about a smile. It could be a smiley face. It could be the smile of a son. It could be the smile of someone they love. And what they're going to do is when they walk, they're going to take that smile and insert it. So let's say I'm going to insert it in my shoulder. I'm going to walk a while with that smile in my shoulder. And then I'm going to let that smile travel down my arm and end up in my elbow, perhaps, maybe one of my fingertips, move around the body more and more. And we'll talk it through in the book, tell people how to do it. And the smile can become so big that it enlarges, it fills up your whole back, or it can fit in one freckle on your face. And you just walk. And what happens is when you're doing that, the brain is sending signals to that part of the body. And a lot of these parts of the body, you can call them unlived spaces. In other words, we're not too familiar with them, especially when we walk, right? Yeah. You might be very familiar with your back when you're lying down on the bed or in a chair on a floor because that's pressing. But how familiar are you with your back when you're walking, unless perhaps you're injured or something? So the Inner Smile Walk, where you take a walk and you allow it to travel through your body as you walk, I see how it lights people up inside. So I really, really love that. And then we end by taking the smile. You can either leave it someplace in your body, perhaps where there's an injury, or you can take it out in your hands and throw it up into the ethers and send it to a friend or someone that needs it, or to the world at large. And so I really like that one.
I love that one. I'd maybe even leave it on the bench for somebody.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's perfect, Andrew.
That'd be a good way to do that. No, I love that concept of that. That inner smiling helps you then also send signals, as you said, around the brain, right?
Oh, yes. It really creates these neural pathways into parts of the body. And it's amazing because some people will say to me, this has happened on many occasions now, where they start out and they're guiding the smile, meaning, oh, I'm going to send it down my arm. Oh, I can feel that. It's interesting. Oh, yeah, I'm going to bring it into my chest or my heart. I'll often tell people start. And then many people did the same thing. Then the smile starts to move on its own and it starts to go places they didn't think it would go. And to me, I don't know how that works, to be honest. I'm fascinated by it. But many people have told me, they said, all of a sudden it came to the back of my head and I felt it there. You know, so that's fascinating. You know, so what's that? What's the system that's creating that?
It is interesting. And it's something I notice when I do some of my meditations around energy. And, you know, so you start off by moving the energy around intentionally. And then at some point it switches. And I'd never understand what is that switch and where that switch happens. But just remain open to the mystery of it there and say, wow, that's fun. That's cool. And it's valuable to do that. If, you know, I loved your GBS system. I think it's really useful, not just for walking, to be honest with you. I think I'm going to try and use it when I start meetings and everything.
Ground beneath
the minute
you,
to ground, to breathe.
Yeah,
peace in the space.
Yes,
valuable. So thank you for sharing those tips. I hope we've inspired people to think about walking, to think about it more than just a physical activity. And we want people obviously to go out and buy your book and explore those 35 walks. That would be wonderful. Are there any other people you would recommend or any other resources that people could look into if they are interested in understanding more about walking and the joys of walking?
Well, I you know, it sounds like kind of an odd answer, but I would say children, you know, watch children more. Maybe kids from 3 to 6, that age, watch them walk, watch them move, watch them look at the earth, watch them discover. I mean, that's it. Because, you know, as far as thought leaders and things, I think in many ways, the world is really filled up with information. People are pretty stocked up with information. Of course, I wrote a book too. What we're talking about is information. But nonetheless, I think, when I mentioned children, and the last walk of the book is called the Childlike Wonder Walk. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I suggest to people is when you're with the child walking, don't so much take a video of him when he's pointing to a flower with a little bee on it. Rather, put the video away and you yourself take a look at that flower and bee through the eyes of a child, through the eyes of wonder. And so I think that's one of the things I would say. And also, all of us have this, you know, we mentioned the GBS versus the GPS, but we all have this internal sense of what we need in our life. It gets buried often. Our intuition gets buried. Our inner voice often gets buried in the world around us, in the static of the world. But when we do these things, whether it be walking, meditation, walking mindfully, meditation in general, we tend to connect into those places more. And when we tend into when we tap into those places more, Andrew, and I'm sure you've experienced this, you start to know what book to buy and what to read and what YouTube video perhaps to listen to. You start to get guided to these things. It starts to all kind of fall into place. So there are certain other people I could say, well, Thich Nhat Hanh is perhaps the pioneer of walking meditation that's been brought to the West. Yeah. And it's beautiful, it's embodied, it's simple. You know, he talks, you know, one of his things he'll say is walk as if you're kissing the earth. I mean, this alone is beautiful. Just that sentence is beautiful. So yeah, Thich Nhat Hanh, if people are more interested in this sort of work. But I would say if someone has the ability to watch or spend time with a child and how that child relates to movement in the world around them, that can be a really interesting teaching.
Oh, definitely, definitely. It's making me smile because my daughter at the moment is 8. And I must say, if you're going to follow her walks, you need to be physically fit because she spends most of the time cartwheeling.
Yeah. But the thing is that no one's telling her to cartwheel. I mean, I don't know. I don't. Maybe she's a gymnast. But in general, it's something born in her. It's a playfulness. So you could talk to someone who knows about body kinetics. They know about the brain. And they could tell you exactly what's happening when she's cartwheeling, right? And the benefits of this and what it does to the proprioceptor sites and all this stuff. But she knows none of that. She just knows there's a part of her that has joy in doing the cartwheel. So when I say watch the kids, it's to give adults a license to go back to that place within them that wants to do the cartwheel. And maybe at this point it's with some heavy padding, but nonetheless, and a spotter, but nonetheless, to connect into that. And that's, I think if my biggest takeaway for people in that regard is that there's a book within us all, right? Mm-hmm. And to learn to read that book is really quite beautiful. And we can learn to read that book by giving ourselves quiet time within to connect into the book. And walking helps us to do that.
It does. I love that. And the other thing I've noticed about my child when she walks is she doesn't walk at a constant speed.
There's
slow periods, there's quick periods, there's stop, there's something that catches her attention, whether that's a bee or a rock or an aeroplane or whatever. And then there's other, when she's off and running, and you know, there's a natural flow to it, which we somehow lose as adults, but we become more regimented in a way.
Yes, exactly. And I think for her, again, and I'm not witnessing her, but most kids in general, there's no forethought in that. It's an organic expression of their being. It's just how they move in the moment. And granted, as we, age, mature, if that's the right word, you know, we do come into certain rhythms, and those rhythms may serve us well in life. But so many of us have become out of balance, and we've lost this deep connection to movement in its purest sense, right? So now everything is about the trainer teaches me to do this. But we do know there's a movement system in our body where it knows what it wants to do. And you know, I was a physical fitness trainer for many, many years and was a bodybuilder, as you mentioned earlier. And I learned early on that there's certain exercises that work certain muscles, but everyone is so unique. You know, we think we're all the same, and what works for one won't work for another. And what seems bizarre that someone is doing will work perfectly for them. And so you know, I've really opened my eyes to the world has a perfection that's beyond my understanding. And I have to trust in that more than I trust in anything my ego or my intellect could come up with as far as understanding this well, life.
That is a very profound sentence to end us on. So I thank you for that. But before you go, just one final little question, Glenn. I'd love to know what brings you joy.
This talking to new people, like right now, but just so people know, they're only going to be listening, but we're recording with video. So I'm getting to look at Andrew. I see his eyes. I see his face, his smile. So this brings me great joy, meeting new people in a way that has depth, authenticity, sincerity, love, heart space. That is incredible for me. Meeting a tree. I love trees, meeting a new tree, roses, roses really light me up, flowers, and kindness. I think, you know, kindness, it can be a very challenging world. And when I see kindness offered often by people who are having their own challenges, it just moves me to the center of my being, and it waters the garden of joy within me.
Well, thank you, Glenn, for sharing that again. Very beautifully said. Thank you for that. And it's been a pleasure for me to get to know you during this chat. So thank you for spending the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Andrew.
You know, for our listeners, hopefully, you know, you're inspired by my chat with Glenn today about the joy of walking to add some more walking into your life, not only for your own joy, but also to bring some more joy into the lives of others. And if you want to find out more about what Glenn is up to, please visit his website, livingthehighestyou.com, or you can connect with Glenn on Facebook, author Glenn Bergenkamp, or on Instagram at simply Glenn Birkenkamp. So there's many ways you can connect with Glenn and find out what he's up to, not only in the walking space, but also in this mystery of living the highest you, which we didn't have time to talk about today. But thank you, Glenn, so much for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure talking
thank
with you.
Thank you.
And for our listeners out there, really, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to us today and for following us where you can find us in the Art and Science of Joy. And I hope you tune in next week for the next episode of the Art and Science of Joy podcast. Until then, stay well, stay safe, walk and be joyful.